Did you miss us all?
Yes.
Why, where were we? You don't even know where we were.
Okay, I hope that you were well and happy.
Mr. Cora looked after us all.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We had a night out.
That is wonderful.
And we went to an engagement.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yes, thank God. Wonderful. Okay, we're looking here at chapter 30, Perek Lamed. Now, chapter Lamed begins with, you see that? So there we are. Page 133, 134. Yeah, there's the Perek Lamed. You see that? Oid Zois. Now, another point. Further, in order to help a person achieve a closeness to Hashem and a joyfulness in relation to Hashem, and the idea that through joyfulness a person is able to come to be able to deal better with their own inner struggles. You see the first positive piece of advice with when there's some kind of inner turmoil is to find a way of looking at it in a positive way and to be able to have a mood of simcha, a mood of joyfulness, because that makes you lighter on your feet, so to speak. You're able to deal with the ins and outs of the situation, and one isn't going to get squashed by some negative thoughts which try to pull a person down and make them miserable. And when they're miserable, then they're more likely to do other things, to do things which are actually negative in one way or the other. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's advice is simcha and an alertness which leads to a zrizus, a swiftness. And he's giving pieces of advice in order to achieve this in different ways. And how to inspire oneself. See, a person might be miserable, might be gloomy, and might feel bad about themselves and about life. And what Tanya is trying to do is give us coping mechanisms which help us feel better about ourselves and about life and about Hashem and about our role in the world, and to see that everything is in our hands and that we're able to achieve everything that can be achieved, including the bringing of Mashiach, which is all in our hands at this moment, now. Right. So, Perek Lamed. Oid Zois. Now, another point. Yosim Aliboy, a person should consider in his heart, or put in one's heart, Lakaim Maimer Azal, to keep the saying of the sages, Vahave Shval Ruach, be humble, Bifnei Chol Ha'odom, before every human being. Every human being in the world, we can learn something from them. And we're able to see something which we can gain from every single person. There's a famous Hasidic saying, how Rabbi Zusya, who was one of the early Hasidim, a friend of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, and he wrote one of the letters of approbation to Tanya, Rabbi Zusya said there are all kinds of things you can learn from a thief. That you can learn something from a thief, and one can learn from everyone. Vahavi be'emes la'amitoi, and in genuine terms, be humble bifnei chol adam bifnei chol ha'odam mamash, in relation to every person. Afilu bifnei kal shebekalim, even what one might consider the lowest of the low, one should feel humble in relation to that person.
What can you learn from a thief?
Now, how does it go? First of all, his dedication to try to achieve what he's trying to achieve, even though there are lots of risks involved. Also, the fact that he will risk everything for something small. Whether it's big or small, he'll go for it. I can't remember. Can you remember the others, Mr. Sasha?
No.
It's in Hayom Yom.
think he asked God to help
is
him.
That, is that a good thing?
That's another, that's another point that the Gemara says. Yeah.
Is that a good thing to risk everything, whether it's a good, big or small?
You know, when you're talking about, when you put it in other terms, when you put it in terms of a mitzvah, then even the smallest mitzvah is infinitely valuable.
That's different, okay.
You see? Mm-hmm.
It's, right.
Now, so how can you be humble in front of another person who, in some sense, is lowest of the low? Yeah? Lowest of the low implies that he's a sinner, he does wrong things. V'hainu alpi maimel hazal, this you can achieve according to the saying of the sages, al todin es chavecho ad shetagia limkaimai, which is in Pirkei Avot. In Ethics of the Fathers, don't judge your friend or another person until you are in the same place as him. So in other words, each person is in their own particular situation, and you can't judge someone else. They may be behaving in a very negative way, but let's try and understand what situation they're in. Ki makoimoi goyrim lo lachtoi. His situation, now Rabbi Shlomo Zalman presents a kind of an image of a particular kind of individual in a particular situation. The situation he's in causes him to sin. Why? His way of making a living is that he has to be in the marketplace all day long. And so therefore he has to be one of the people sitting on the street corners, which is where his job is, and there are lots of other people there who are a bad influence. Ve'ein of royes kol hataybus, and his eye sees all kinds of desirable things. Va'ein roya, and the eye sees. Va'alev choymed, and the heart desires. Ve'yitzroy boya katano bo'era ma'ofer, and his evil desire flames up like a burning baker's oven, as it says in the prophet Hosea, who boya keish lehava, his desire is burning like a fire. So that's because he's in this situation of being in a place surrounded by desirable things of different kinds and in bad company, and so that's why he behaves or thinks in a negative way. But you can't think badly of him for that, because that's the situation that he's in. That's unfortunately, or as it happens, that is the way in which he earns his living. So he's surrounded by all kinds of problematic issues, and he gets swept away by them. You can't feel superior to him just because he is swept away in this way. Now, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is going to turn around and say that, in fact, he has no excuse, and even if he is in this situation, he should be able to control himself. But at this moment, he's looking at you, the reader, thinking about another person. When Rabbi Shlomo Zalman addresses that other person, he speaks to him in a different way, and he says, you know what? You should exercise self-control, and you should be careful, and even if you're surrounded by anything, you nonetheless should be able to restrain yourself. That's how he talks to him. But when he's talking to us, the reader, he's saying, look, you can't think badly of that person. That is the situation he's in, and you can't judge him because you're in a different situation, which he goes on to describe like the reader's situation. Which is not the case of someone who only goes rarely to the market, and most of the time is sitting at home studying Torah. That's the image of the reader of Tanya. And even if he does go all day to the market, it might be that he is not so heated in his nature. There's the whole idea of a person having some people having a very passionate nature and having other people having a less passionate nature. There's a general idea that younger people have a more passionate nature, but even apart from that, there's the idea that there are different personality types, and some have greater passions than others. Ki ein hayetzer shove b'chol nefesh, and because the animal desire is not equal in every person. Yesh, he's quoting here. Yesh yitzrei kach. Some people have such and such a desire, and others have a different desire. So you can't blame, he's saying here to us, you can't blame someone else doing something negative, so you can't feel superior over him. And you might say that if I were in that situation, I might be even worse, God forbid. I'm in a lucky situation. I'm able to sit in a room full of books and study, or to be surrounded by a sort of a nice, pleasant environment and not have these passions and temptations that this chap is exposed to. See, it's a little bit like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's famous that it says in the Chumash, Moshe was the most humble of all people. Now, that means he was humble in relation to every single person. How could Moshe, who spoke with Hashem, who was on Mount Sinai, who was so inspiring, how could he be more humble than someone else in the Jewish people, an ordinary, simple person? And the answer is that Moshe was indeed very humble, and he thought to himself like this. You know why I'm the famous Moshe? Because God gave me a whole lot of different advantages. If God would have given the same advantages to someone else, they would have done even better. They would have done better than me. In other words, he was able to remove the issue of the advantages that he had over another person and see the grandeur in another person. You know that person? He looks like a simple person. If he would have been given the qualities that I was given by God, he would have done much better. He would have achieved more. So in that sense, Moshe was humble. Now, so what Rabbi Shneur Zalman is saying to us, don't consider anyone else in a negative light, because you never know what is their real situation. And he doesn't actually say this, but we can imagine if we ourselves were in that same situation, we might be much worse than that person is. There's an interesting story in the Gemara. The Gemara tells the story of two rabbis who are discussing one of the kings of Israel who unfortunately served idols, and he's famous that he served idols, was a terrible thing. And they were discussing him in a rather disparaging way. I think it was King Manasseh. So that night, one of the rabbis had a dream of King Manasseh. And King Manasseh starts talking to him in the dream, and turns out to be a great Torah scholar. He starts discussing with him some point of halacha, of Jewish law, and King Manasseh is this incredible Torah scholar. So he says to King Manasseh, "You're such a Torah scholar. How come you served idols?" "I served idols," says King Manasseh. "You know, if you would have been in that situation, ropes would not have kept you back from it. It was such a thirst to serve idols, everyone succumbed to it. And if you would have been there, if they would have just tied you up, you would have broken free just to try and serve the idols." So people are in different situations. Okay, but now Rabbi Shneur Zalman turns his attention to the man in the marketplace, who might also be reading Tanya. And he says to him now, "Vehine be'emes," now in fact, in truth, "Gam mishehu mechumam ma'od b'tivoy," even someone who is very passionate by nature, "upanasosoy hu hi liyos miyoshri kronos kol hayom," and his job is that he has to sit on street corners all day long, surrounded by terrible influences and temptations, "ein loy shum hisnatsus," he has no excuse, "al chatov," for his sins, "umikri rosha gomo," and he's called a complete rosha, Ala she'ein pachad elokim le'neged einov, because he didn't have fear of God before his eyes. I'm not quite sure what this street corner looked like in 1796 when Daniel was written.
It's probably a very poor situation, a street corner. And however, I agree with Rabbi Ashner Zalman that a person should have a measure of right and wrong and control even in that situation. That makes him a civilized.
You're right.
Don't you agree? That makes him a civilized person.
Absolutely.
I mean, there were those times when I was told by a non-Jewish person I worked with, and when she had, they lived in Shoreditch, which was and when she was young, very rough area, and people used to maraud in the streets, and they used to come out and get drunk and singing and dancing and acting in an obscene manner. And she said, but when we used to look up and we used to see a Jewish house with the candles light, well, see, we never took to the street. We were civilized. With all our faults, we were civilized. We never took to the street and did that. So the point is this: you can have to mix with all kinds of people, but you don't have to go down to that level if you don't want to.
Right, and that's exactly it. That's the day, and that's what Rabbi Shlomo goes on to say: Ki hayu loy lehisapek. This person should have controlled himself. And he should have controlled the spirit of desire shebelibo in his heart. Mipnei pachad Hashem, because of awe of Hashem, haroye kol maisav, who can see everything that he's doing. Commotions for leil, as we explained above. Ki hamoyach shalit al alev betoldosoi, because the mind controls the heart by its nature. God has built into us the power that the mind can control the heart, even though it can be a tremendous, tremendous challenge getting the mind to control the heart, and very often one needs all kinds of devious ways in order to control oneself in different situations, like if one is very tempted to lose one's temper. So you need all kinds of ways of thinking, hopefully, which come into play so that you are able to control that. And these are the challenges of life. And
is it true that I did read somewhere that when a mature person flies off the handle, loses their temper, at least it's a sign of immaturity?
Well, I think that's one way of characterizing it, because a child is very often, he gets angry at the smallest thing. If you take a toy away from a little child, so he starts crying and screaming, give me back.
Mm.
Now, the problem is you have adults who behave in a similar way.
So I see. So it is a sign of immaturity then.
You've never learned it.
Is it a sign of immaturity then?
Well,
drive the hand up the slightest thing.
I've not been able to learn it.
But you're saying that as a limud zchus of speaking on their behalf. That it's not their fault, they just didn't learn.
Yes. Unless one has it pointed out and then they're ready to change it. Like,
should we?
Well, but it might be very difficult to change.
Should we have learned?
Yes, yeah, so it's hard work. It's hard work.
I mean, should we have learned something to deal with this thing without flying off a short fuse? Should we have learned something?
Yeah, there's a notice upstairs in the school corridor. It's your temper, so please keep it.
Interesting.
The thing is, people are hungry, then they've got a short temper, and there's certain other circumstances. Okay, the anger and short fuses. It's not always necessarily just about being immature.
Not always.
Someone who's in pain.
Yeah, that's
terribly
really
short
good.
Fuse.
Okay,
all
so
right.
That's a very, very good point.
There are
that's
exceptions.
A point.
That's a very
there's
good point.
There's always exceptions, yeah. But you know.
And if you're hungry and in pain, then you pay.
Well, yeah, but then even then, some people don't behave like that, even when they're hungry. No, but it's just a matter of temperament as well.
Yes, it is, really.
Well, you see, what it's true that it's temperament, but the challenge of life is to be able to deal with one's temperament.
Yeah.
That's.
I mean, when you're a young, very young person, you can't do. You fly off the handle. You get angry. You're all. That's all. But I think you sort of mellow down a bit as you get a bit older.
I'm not so sure.
A bit more mellow. No.
Well.
Grumpy old man.
But that's a different thing. Some people have got a grumpy nature all their life.
There you go. But also, there are certain medications that give as a side effect.
Really, you might be
like steroids.
No, you're not grumpy. Steroids, I don't think you're grumpy at all.
Angry.
I think you've got a short fuse at times, but I don't think you're grumpy.
Okay.
But grumpy? then again, that's okay.
Yes, yeah, sort of gloomy.
I'm a bit better than what I was. I always used to worry. I always used to not have to handle at times, but I'm better now.
Okay.
I think.
I think.
That's right. Now. He says, "Vehine be'emes." Right, we are now 3, 6, 7, 8 lines down. "Vehine be'emes." Now, in fact, in truth, "Shehi milchama gedola." It's a great battle, ba'atzuma. It's an enormous battle. Lishbo hayetzer, to break through this evil desire, haboya ke'esh lehava, which is burning like a flaming fire. Mipnei pachad Hashem, because of one's fear of God. U'kamoy nisoyen mamash. It's a real test for a person that they are looking at this man in the marketplace that is surrounded by all these temptations and he has to control himself. And that is actually a real test from God. Now he turns back to the person who's not in the marketplace and says, see, this is the logic here. There's two people. One is the scholar in his study learning Torah. The other one is the man in the marketplace surrounded by passionate things. And what Rabbi Shlomo Zalman has been saying is the man in the marketplace has to exercise real self-control in order to control himself in that situation. Now then he turns back to the scholar in his study and he says, are you using the same energy to serve Hashem as that man in the marketplace should be doing? Now, you don't have to use your energy for self-control in the same way because you're not surrounded by temptations. But on the contrary, there is a positive way that you should be inducing yourself to have a tremendous enthusiasm and love for Hashem. Like using energy in order that when you daven, when you say a few words of davening, it's with a real focus and passion and love to Hashem. So he's turning back to the scholar. V'hilachach tzorich kol adam. Therefore every single person. Lefi mashahu, according to his qualities, Mashu Makoimoi, his place where he is, Umadrigosoi, and his level, Ba'avodas Hashem, and his service of God, Lishkol V'Livchon Ba'atzmoi, he should measure within himself, he should test himself and assess himself, Imhu Oived Hashem, whether he serves God, Be'elech U'Bechines Milchoma Atzuma Kuzu, in such a way, like such a battle that man in the marketplace has got, v'nisoyen kazeh, standing up to such a test, b'fchinas va'aseh toiv, in terms of doing good. The man in the marketplace has a struggle not to do bad. The man who is, or the woman who is protected from these sort of negative surroundings to a certain extent, but is that person using the same energy in a positive way to do something good? Kugoin ba'avodas ha'tfila, b'chavona, such as when davening, with kavona, with intention, with sincerity. Lishboich nafshei lifnei Hashem, to pour out one's soul before God, b'chol koichei mamash, with all one's power, ad mitzui hanefesh, to like squeezing out one's soul with total giving oneself over to Hashem. Now, you see, that is something we can imagine. For example, we're coming now to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and these are auspicious times for intense davening. And it is possible for a person to daven on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in an inspired way, that one is able to feel closeness to Hashem. And really, the words come from one's own heart. And it is possible to get to that place inside oneself where there is a real outpouring of the soul to Hashem. And what do you think?
I'll tell you what I think.
Go on.
I have been going to shul in the mornings, the whole summer holidays with my boys.
Oh, how beautiful.
Now, to go to shul and daven in the Kehillah in the morning is a completely different experience to me personally. I find it very difficult to daven at home. I have to go out in the garden, or I can't do it. And now, the togetherness, the way everyone's pulling everyone up, and then by the time you get to the Amida, and it's like there's a force, a whooshing force, pushing you up to the davening. You can't get that at home on your own. You're in the kitchen.
Do you know about morning? I mean?
And then, yes, in the morning.
Davening. You can't get that at home if you daven on your own.
No. And it's all start from the beginning when you're looking for the minion, and there's this so many men needed, and then so many men, and all of a sudden the excitement, you get the minion, and it's like everyone's doing, and then that Kaddish is said.
How cute. Yes.
It has been an experience.
It's lovely, but what if you haven't got a synagogue near
you? No, that's what I'm saying.
This is very difficult.
They're not even organised for women, mostly. You're lucky that you've got a.
Thank God they don't mind me coming.
You've got a section where you can go.
And they don't mind you coming.
You go in the tea room.
I go in the tea room.
Where's this?
This is
Egerton Road, isn't it?
Big up Egerton Road synagogue.
Viva Egerton Road.
Why don't they have
And they make a whole big special breakfast.
Because most women, the only synagogue I know where women always went all the time is 770. Because they would go to particularly to see the Rebbe, because whenever the Rebbe came to daven, that was always something.
But do they come here, Popovich?
Not in the morning.
So you're lucky.
They could,
if they wanted, they could go on the gallery. Nobody.
But there's no davening in the upstairs shul on the weekday.
Lucky you've
it's
got
the only davening is downstairs. There's no.
No,
she's talking about weekday morning.
Yeah, in a weekday morning.
I think that's a lovely experience, and I think it's lovely you were able to achieve that.
And I told them.
Were you the only woman?
And I told them that now I know, and I wrote to my rabbi in Yerushalayim and told him all about it, how I can see now. I've got a bit more respect for the men now. Because actually they're the ones
happening?
Who are knitting the whole Kehillah together in that morning davening.
In the morning, you see. Right. Yeah.
Later on when the women come for Shabbos, well, they have set up this amazing foundation, the men, on their own in the morning. And I don't know how they do it, because I have been so tired, I've had to come back home and go to bed for a couple of hours. And how they do it in the mornings in the winter, I couldn't do it.
They're wonderful. I don't know how they do it.
In the summer, it's an easy.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know how they do it. It's a tremendous discipline.
And they have to probably get out of bed at 6 o'clock.
Oh, my goodness me.
To do that. So I've got a lot of admiration now.
I have a lot of admiration for them. I don't know how they do it. But I'm in a position where I don't have a shul near me.
Well, yeah, but the point is, even if you do it, most shuls are not organized for women in the day, in the weekdays.
No.
We just have to face that. Yes, but it doesn't necessarily have a facility for women.
No, Springfield, what's it called?
I don't like it there.
No, well.
Where do you daven Shabbat?
I used to go to Lee Bridge Road Shore, just up around the corner, and that's shut down. Now they're all closing down.
Okay.
I've been to the Springfield Road Shore. I don't like it very much.
What's the next nearest?
I don't know why. I can't seem to feel that I want to go there.
So
and it's too far to walk here?
It's a mile.
It's a mile, yeah.
Don't always fancy it's walking that mile. Yeah. Yeah. And on bad weather and that, and don't always. Yeah. It's not easy. See, it's a very. Where I live, there used to be all Jewish people there.
Right.
I can walk to the Brent House Road, the Hackney Synagogue.
You can't walk
better.
There.
I do walk there.
Why? That's further.
It's easy for me to walk. I can go to Clarence Road and I'm in out in Hackney. That's easier. But I don't want to do that every day.
No,
I don't always
want to
do it in the bad weather.
Yeah.
I don't always want to do it, you see.
All right. Well, look. The point is, wherever one is,
but I have to daven at home.
It's very. It's a very beautiful that you were able to go to shul over the summer.
I mean, what you're doing is lovely.
But it doesn't always work out that way.
No, it doesn't.
And the thing is to be able to feel that wherever one is, Hashem is there, and to be able to feel the closeness to Hashem.
Yes, of course.
And that in davening. Now, then we come to Rosh Hashanah. So hopefully Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, one will be in a shul somewhere.
Oh, I will be. Yeah. Most definitely will be. Of course. Well, I go to the Hackney Synagogue. I will go
there. To Brent House Road.
Yeah, because okay. I mean, I can walk there.
Okay, you feel comfortable.
Yes, because everything happened there. The boys got my mitzvah and I got there
beautiful.
And they went to cheder then. And I'm attached to it, you see.
Lovely.
And now that's closing down.
Is it?
For another 1 to 2
I didn't
years. At least a year. Beth used to go there.
But it is going. Because they can't keep up a synagogue without the people that go there.
That's true,
with his wife, I believe, and kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rabbi Tiefenbaum goes there.
Yes, he does. He davens there.
And his wife and kids.
I don't know about his wife, but he davens there.
Mm-hmm.
I know he davens there.
He's the rabbi. Though.
Yes, that is the Rabbi Tiefenbaum Jr.
Somewhere around Moresby Road or
Casey. Yes, I know, and that's a fair old trot for me.
And
I don't.
Stamford Hill Synagogues.
If I don't fancy a thing, I can't do it.
Okay, but anyway, the point is, wherever one is going to daven, and there are stories of people dafka going into the garden or the woods or the mountains to daven. And feel more spiritual and more close to Hashem. So the point is that one should make the effort to the positive effort to really feel a positive feeling in one's davening. And then he goes on, then there is another aspect of now wait a second. Now how do we battle in order to daven in a good way? Battling with one's body and one's animal soul, which tend to prevent focus in one's davening, with a tremendous battle, to go beyond one's animal soul, to squash it like dust, before davening, morning and evening, day after day. In other words, the body is sort of loath to do anything spiritual. I mean, that's part of our physicality. And one has to move it into a more spiritual mode. The gam b'shas hatfila, and also the time of davening, liyageya atzmai, to make the effort, v'yegiyas nefesh, with a real spiritual effort, v'yegiyas boso, and it's almost a physical effort. K'moy shekosov l'kamen barichas, as we're going to write further on, about the effort that goes into davening. And so therefore, comparing the person who is surrounded by good things, with a person who's surrounded by bad things. So the person surrounded by bad things has a tremendous struggle not to be drawn into something bad. And the person who's surrounded by good things, Bezras Hashem, he or she should have the same level of struggle,
But have they? That man in the market has got a tremendous struggle and a tremendous achievement for what he does. Does that man, the very pious man, does he feel that same?
Okay, well, that is the critical question that the Hasidic movement addresses to frum people in general. If a person is frum in the sense that that's the way they're brought up and that's their surroundings and they're not making any effort, so Rabbi Shneur Zalman is saying you're not doing what you could be doing. You should be making the same level of effort in a positive direction, the same that man in the market has to struggle in order to control himself.
V'chol
shelo yigi l'idei midazu, and anyone who hasn't reached this level, lehilochim im gufoy, to battle with his body, with his physicality, milchoma atzuma kuzu, with this tremendous battle, adayin lo yigia, he hasn't reached lefchinas ve'erech milchomas hayetzer, to the quality of the battle with the evil desire, haboya ke'esh le'evor, which is burning like flames, liyos nichna v'nishva mipnei pachad Hashem, that it should be subdued and broken in front of awe of Hashem, as regards awe of Hashem. So in other words, it's possible for the man, the man in the study full of books, full of holy books, to feel very humble compared with the man in the marketplace, because the man in the marketplace makes some kind of effort to control himself and expends enormous energy in this, and the man surrounded by holy books isn't making the same level of positive effort in a positive direction, so he feels humble before that other person. So it's interesting that the scholar is able to feel humble in front of the cart driver.
But it doesn't happen.
Is that how it all started, this chapter? Was that saying, or was that in the Sedra?
Well, the
Sedra... Did it all start in that very Sedra?
It began off being humble in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Humble in relation to everyone. Okay, ladies, I think we'll stop here, but it's continuing this image, and with the help of Hashem, we'll be continuing that next week.
May I ask
next
a question? I'm rather perplexed about something to do with what's on your plate. Now, say you've got vegetables and you've got meat there. What is the bracha? You've got meat there and you've got potatoes and greens and something there.
Now, are you eating bread with it?
Not necessarily. Say you are, or say you're not.
Okay, let's start with if you are eating bread. If you're eating bread, you wash your hands, say Al Natanas Yadayim. Then you take the piece of bread, you say Hamotzei Lechem Min HaOretz. You eat the bread. You eat a bit of bread,
yes,
a kazayis of bread. Now, everything else you eat is included in that blessing, except if they bring dessert, like apple compote or something, or a fruit, a bunch of grapes.
Yes.
You say the bracha boira priya eats on the grapes.
So it's eights, so grapes. It's
yeah, the a bracha
and the apple is the grapes.
Anything with any fruit which you have as dessert, you make a separate bracha.
Yeah.
You make a separate
bracha. And grapes is a eight because it grows on a tree.
Yeah, the vine is considered like a tree.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Now, so that is when you do wash for bread. If you don't wash for bread,
yes.
First of all, you eat the vegetables. You say bora priha doma.
Right.
And then you eat the meat, which is shahakol niyal bidvara.
I see. But if you eat a piece of bread, it's all included.
Yeah.
You just say matzah lechem min ha'aretz.
Yeah.
And that's included in the plate of what you eat.
Yep.
I've often wondered, actually, you've got a different...